Good morning, everyone. This is Linda Santavica on Pressing Beyond. In finding purpose, we often have to press beyond the unexpected pitfalls that crop up when we are on a mission. We all serve in different capacities, some from a private space, whether it be writing, painting, or research. And then there are some of us who are called into public through the performing arts, politics, media, as well as those who are called to provide hope and encouragement by sharing the good news. We are speaking with Senior Pastor Craig Geergo, who is living out his true purpose, but not without having to jump through a few hurdles to get there. Prior to where he is now, as senior pastor at Christ Church at Grove Farm, Pastor Craig had to transition from his identity as the underdog to prove to a higher calling that he was the right one for the job. Not just a pastor, but a husband and a father to three daughters, Pastor Craig is thriving in his sweet spot and doing what he was called to do. Good morning, Pastor Craig.
Good morning, Linda. That's quite an introduction. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be with you here today.
Well, it's a joy to have you because you are the senior pastor of the church I attend at Christ Church at Grove Farm. So, Pastor Craig, how big is our congregation?
Yeah, so we have 1,600 members on our books, which is a sizable congregation. That officially classifies us as a mega church, for what it's worth.
A mega church indeed. So what makes your story all the more interesting is that you came full circle. Now, before we get to where you are now, let's go back to when being a pastor wasn't even on your radar.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, just to start out, I guess, give you a little background. I'm from Pittsburgh, Christ Church at Grove Farm, obviously, the suburbs of Pittsburgh, the Mon Valley, which is like the old steel towns of Pittsburgh. It's what people who maybe aren't from the area think of when they think of Pittsburgh, the old mill towns. And so I'm from those parts of the world. I think with that comes a certain blue collar identity. You know, my parents both work in industrial settings for 45 plus years. And so there is a certain grittiness that comes along with that, which I'm really grateful for.
Oh, sure.
There's a salt of the earthness that comes along with that, that I think is hopefully healthy. I think in my case too, Linda, there was also kind of a moralistic piece that came along with it. My parents are highly moralistic people, you know, the good values. My mom and dad, I mean, gosh, they were the kind of people that are upstanding citizens, the kind of people that you would love to have as your neighbors. You know, they just have that vibe to them. And so I think, you know, taking that background of being from Pittsburgh, from the Mon Valley, and having parents like mine who are just good kind of people, that's created in me a certain, you know, persona. And yes. I think that persona was almost like all-American boy kind of, or at least aspirational all-American boy in identity. So, you know, it is interesting to be full circle. I know where I come from and I'm really grateful for it. I value that part of, I guess, my own history is where I come from.
Well, you know, Pastor Craig, from what you just said, you're a real, what do they call it? A yinzer?
That's right, Linda. Very good.
I think that's wonderful. Okay, so you are now going to school. You get to a point now where it's time to leave the nest.
Yeah, so I graduated from school, and it's interesting. Probably a lot of people could identify with this. I was not a great student in high school. I kind of did just enough to get by. I was a typical guy. You know, you're interested in everything else but actually studying and education. And so I did enough to get by, probably at best a B student, at worst a C student, maybe sometimes even a little worse than that. And I kind of got by. I didn't really engage much, probably, you know, in terms of my studies. And so when I took the SAT back in the day, I didn't perform at a high level. Not only that, like I had a very middling GPA. I played sports. I was involved in theater, kind of well-rounded, but educationally, not necessarily someone who had the most impressive resume. So
that wasn't your wheelhouse in school.
No, it wasn't, you know, definitely not. I don't know if you could identify with that, but that was not my wheelhouse, as you put it.
Right.
So it's interesting. I had a desire, though, to go to a local school here called Grove City College. Mm-hmm. Now, you got to understand and appreciate that I was about to be the first person in my family, this goes back to the blue collar thing, to go to school, to go to college. With that in mind, my parents did instill in me from a time I was young, a desire or a goal to go to college, to go to university. Mm-hmm. That was something they put before me. I think they had enough vision to realize that their way of life, blue collar thing, wasn't going to be what it was for them further on down the road. And so they really instilled in me a desire to go to college. However, I don't think they, and this is no slight to them, but I don't think we knew where to begin with that. Like, I knew of the colleges I would see play football on Saturday morning. I knew about Pitt and Penn State and any of the big schools, Notre Dame.
You were the typical jock.
That's all I knew. But I was in a group in high school. It's called Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I had a coach who was the leader of FCA. He had a son who was going to Grove City College. And so they told me about Grove City College. I met their son, and it made a great impression on me. And I thought, man, if there are guys like this dude who are at Grove City, then I want to go to that school. That's where I belong. Kind of set my sights on it. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I knew nothing about Grove City really, other than what I'd heard from this couple who are the FCA leaders, this coach, and just seeing their son. I didn't really know much about
it. You were thinking sports.
I was thinking sports. I was probably thinking girls, you know, typical kind of young guy kind of thing. Well, what I came to find is that Grove City College had incredibly high standards. It's a relatively small school. It's a private Christian college, and they have really rigorous academic standards and a rigorous curriculum to go along with it. Once I got in, I realized like my relatively low SAT score and my low grades most likely weren't going to cut it. And I think this is where you get into the pressing beyond thing. And this is maybe necessary for me to go on to the next level of education.
Like if you're going to stay there, you're going to have to do something about your education.
Or if I may get in, you know, so it's really a miracle I got in. I've actually even thought about this recently. So keep in mind that my scores, I think I had a 920 on the SAT. For all your listeners, that's pretty low. Well, this couple that I mentioned that was influential and led the FCA group, they really went to bat for me, along with a couple other alumni who believed in me, which is so huge. Believing in someone is such a gift. I believe that my coach actually took a letter that he wrote on my behalf and drove up to the college with it in hand and advocated for me to go. So grateful for that because I didn't deserve. I may have, Linda, the worst academic credentials ever for a student who got in at Grove City College.
You had an angel.
I really did.
You were preordained to go there. Okay, so this is wonderful. And then? Yeah.
So I got into school, and by the way, I kind of totally blew it my first year. I did really bad grades. But that was a wake-up call for me. And I had a significant experience that summer between freshman and sophomore year that was defining for me. Though I was in a group like Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and though I went to Grove City College and I chose that, I actually wasn't someone that I would consider to be a follower of Christ. I was a religious person. I've come to understand there's a difference between being a religious person and being a follower of Christ.
I'm so glad you're saying that because I've encountered that in discussions, how some people consider me very religious and I try and explain to them, no, I'm spiritual in my relationship with Christ.
Yeah, I can identify with that just like you can. Mm-hmm. And I had this experience between my freshman year and sophomore year that's really life defining. And that's, I went to the Billy Graham Crusade, which makes me sound like I'm a million years old, in the summer of 1993, which was held at then Three Rivers Stadium.
Well, you know, I went to the same one, but it was in New York and Queens.
Okay.
It was the same tour, but I went to it. Yes, yes.
And I don't know what your experience was, but for me, it changed everything. Like I can relate to the person who says, I went to a big event like this and something happened in my life. Mm-hmm. And that I heard Billy Graham preach the message that he preached to millions of people and it affected me. So much so that I really surrendered my life to God that night. I really began a relationship with Christ that's informed everything since then. And it was amazing. The transformation that happened, Linda, affected me not only, you know, in terms of the kind of friends I was hanging out with, but also it started to give me direction. Perfect. Miraculously, like my academics turned around. After that point, I never got anything lower than a B in school, which was had never been my story. It was like I grew up in that moment. So that was an important thing.
Yeah.
And you know, when I think about pressing beyond, there was absolutely a pressing beyond that took place in that moment. Because here's the deal. It would have been really easy for me to go that night. And when there was this, I'll call it invitation to pray and to respond to the message that was shared that night, I had to press beyond my own self-doubt, my own questions, perhaps, or doubts, my own worry about what other people would think of me. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful that I had somehow the strength to press beyond that night. And to take that step of faith and pray with a person and surrender, as I said, my life to the Lord. So that was important in my life for sure. That takes me, I guess, through college. After graduating college, I was an education major. I got started in a career that actually ended up spanning 11 years as an elementary teacher. These were important years. So, you know, I started out as this teacher and I decided I wanted to be a teacher like when I was a sophomore in high school. I had a clear sense of like, I needed to be a teacher. I don't know where that came from. I guess I thought I was good with kids, you know, and I certainly enjoyed being up front in any kind of like setting. So that was a natural thing for me. And teaching just happened to make sense. I'd student taught in a little town called Mercer, Pennsylvania, and ended up getting a job there following that student teacher experience, which was a great thing. Now, this is a little town. It's like Mayberry on the Andy Griffith Show.
Oh, is it really?
Small little town. Everyone knows everyone.
In relation to Pittsburgh, where's Mercer?
Mercer is about 60 miles north.
Wow. So you're up there. Okay.
Yeah. Between Pittsburgh and Erie. I was there serving for 11 years. It didn't take long for me to get into my time at Mercer, but I started to recognize that there might be a different purpose than I ever recognized previously. And that was a call to ministry. This deep desire to be a part of the work of the church. I didn't even know what that meant or was real, or I'd gotten involved at a church there in Mercer, and through the invitation of a friend, I got involved in serving in the youth group. And I just recognized, and I think this is important also for us, I recognized that something in me like came alive. There was something in me that blossomed in that environment in a way that I had never experienced before. And I think that was part of me understanding and seeing that there was something that I was being led into, and that was ministry in the church. But this led to an interesting journey. As I mentioned, I was teaching for 11 years. Soon after year one, I began to wrestle with this call to ministry. And I had a clear sense that I felt like my future was wrapped up somehow in ministering in the context of the church. And so the question becomes, well, how do you get there? You know, here I am. I've got an education degree. I am equipped to be, at that point, an elementary school teacher specifically. Okay, well, how do I get from point A to point X or Z? How do I get there? And so I started to chart that course out and maybe experiment with how that might take place. And I ran into a lot of closed doors. And some of the doors maybe were closed by me. Others just seemed like, you know, they weren't quite meant to be for me. Right. And it led to some frustrations because I didn't just make the jump from being teacher to being a minister. There was a 10-year period, which, by the way, if you've ever had a desire to do something or be someone, 10 years is a long time.
Oh, like, you know, waiting is painful.
It is. As Tom Petty once said, the waiting is the hardest part. Yeah. And I mean, think about it this way. Like, I'm sure there's some listeners who have desired to have a significant other in their lives, exactly. You know, someone to share life with. And if you've had to wait, whether it's 5 years or 10 years, if you had a period in your life, you're like, I really desire that, but it's not happening. There's like the longest, toughest years.
You know? 10 minutes is torture.
Yeah. And so I went through that. And that was a really difficult time because it became to the point where like I could see the vision for being in a church so clearly.
Yes.
But I felt really, I hate to say stuck, because being a teacher was also a really valuable, important role to play. And I knocked on a lot of doors. I did internships. Yeah. I explored education, like, you know, in the form of seminary, a lot of different things. And it just seemed like I kept on coming up empty on that. And I felt very much stuck, despite the fact that I was passionate and desirous of moving into a new kind of season of life, a new assignment within my calling.
You know, it's really frustrating too, because you now envision this, you are feeling called to this and you're willing to go, but no one's opening any doors.
Yeah, that's right. And not only that, I felt like some doors were getting slammed. I mean, I aggressively pursued job, seminary, and I just felt like I kept on getting turned away in one way mm-hmm. or another. And it made me question mm-hmm. myself. These were early married years for my wife, Lisa, and I. Mm-hmm. And I think for her, it was probably frustrating because it was like this constant question hanging over our household of what's Craig going to be when he grows up? Though I was already growing up. I was not at rest. I was not at peace because somehow this was eating me alive. This desire, this burning sense of there's someone I've got to be was so strong within me that those years were just tumultuous mm-hmm. in my own heart, and my own mind. I know this isn't just me. I know that there are other people, and I hope this is helpful to them as they consider it, because it's like, I think a lot of us have felt that way in seasons of our lives where it's like, no, there's someone I've got to be, but I don't know how it's going to come together. Right. I don't know if it's going to come together. And that's part of the journey that could be so exhilarating, depressing, frustrating, all of that and more. But I'll tell you an interesting piece, because, you know, as I talk about those years as an elementary school teacher, which were great, by the way. I was, Linda, you'll appreciate this. I was like the most unorthodox elementary school teacher that there ever was, you know, which is so classic, I guess, for those people who know me. I didn't really fit that mold per se. Right. I was a male among a highly female populated, you know, industry role, especially in that, at that point. So I was one of a few guys. I was loud and I was probably obnoxious, unfortunately. And
I'm sure the students loved it.
They did. You know, just being a guy gives you a lot of credit with kids. And I was a young guy there. But I'll tell you one thing I learned. By God's grace, he gave me the strength that even though I was kind of torn up inside, I can't overplay that. I could take myself back there, my mind and my heart, and just like the frustration and the deep desire and the yearning for like, there's this other person I've got to be was so strong. One of the things that is important to also highlight here is to be faithful to my job as a teacher during those years.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't mail it in, or I wasn't cutting corners there. I gave that up my all. And I think that's
you stayed faithful when he gave you at the time.
Yeah. And I think though that was difficult at times, and there's a part of that that just deepens our character, mm-hmm. develops our integrity. When I look back on those years and I think about that,
yes,
not only did I learn so much and I got to meet so many cool people and I really enjoyed the students that I had in my classroom, but I also think those were great times for me, and I learned so much and I grew so much through that decade in the classroom.
You know, Pastor Craig, sometimes, and this is a discussion I had with somebody the other day, you know, we hear so much about taking a leap of faith. And I believe that we are called to sometimes abandon our comfort zones. But I also believe sometimes it takes a lot more faith to stay where you are until you're yanked out.
Yeah. So speaking of that, that's a great opportunity to introduce this. You mentioned early on, you talked about coming full circle, right?
Yes.
And there's a really interesting development towards the end of the teaching years, because I was so hungry to be in ministry and just knew in my heart that there was a place for me in the church that God had prepared and I was called, right? I would seek out internships. I did a few different internships during my summers. I had summers off, so I would do internships. Well, one summer leading into the summer, I had remembered meeting a guy, the Reverend John Guest. And John Guest.
Boy, I know John Guest.
Yes, you do.
Pastor John Guest.
For those of you who are from Western Pennsylvania, you know that John Guest has been a giant of a figure in Western Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I'd heard him speak at one point. He made an impression on me, you know, really helpful to me. The words he spoke were so powerful. And so I remembered him and I looked him up. This is early days of internet access for me. I find that he's at a church called Christ Church at Grove Farm in Swickley. And so I just like cold called the church and said, hey, if you're looking for an intern this summer, I'm your guy. I'm available. If you want me to send you a resume, I can do that. I would love to come and serve with your team over the course of the summer. And they actually took me up on it, which was so cool. So I came and I served for a summer at Christ Church at Grove Farm and I had a great experience. Actually, so good that it led to two job offers, actually, by the church. Wow. The first I turned down because the timing wasn't right. I was already committed to a school year. I ended up actually turning down an opportunity to join the staff here. The church came back to me in the spring of the next year and told me they were starting a new ministry for young adults. They were looking for someone to lead it and they wanted to know if I'd be interested. Well, of course I was. The timing was better at this point. I interviewed for the job. We're going back 16 years. I was offered the job to serve as the young adult minister at Christ Church, which was a thrill to me. Remember this yearning? There's someone I gotta be.
Yes, it's like, this is your answered prayer. Here it is.
It's like, here it is. Miraculous fashion. Given the opportunity to serve at Christ Church was like dream scenario for me. Well, my wife and I, and my wife is wise and faithful and so many things. Lisa and I started talking about this. We had two babies at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was expressing my excitement. She had gone along for the interviews, of course, been a part of it. But there was something in Lisa just didn't feel comfortable with this. I laugh now, but at the time it was not a laughing matter, because this yearning, this desire, there's someone I got to be. And my wife's looking at me and saying, you know, I don't know if this is the right fit for you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is everything I've been dreaming of. We continued to talk about it over the course of a couple of weeks. Of course, the church was waiting for a response from me. And eventually through the counsel of some mentors, I recognized that Lisa and I weren't together in this decision. And I wanted us to be unified. That was a value for me.
Absolutely.
So I ended up turning down dream job opportunity at Christ Church. It's so interesting. I can remember this vividly. I can picture where I was. You know, those moments, I could picture where I was in the room. I know what the light was, you know, like hitting through the windows, coming through the windows. I called John Guest, illustrious pastor, someone I looked up to. And I called him and said, John, I said, I really appreciate the opportunity to come and serve, the invitation. I said, however, Lisa and I've talked about it, and it just, the timing's not right. And there was a long pause on the phone. Ooh. And then Pastor John, he was disappointed with me. I'll tell you, Linda, I was so crushed. Not, it wasn't necessarily his words. I agreed with him. I was like, what am I doing? That was such a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. I was honestly, and Lisa, if you're listening, honey, I love you. And you know, we've talked about this, so I'm not saying anything I wouldn't say to you. I was frustrated with Lisa. I was, you know, frustrated it turned out this way. I was probably angry with God. How can it be that for 10 years I've been waiting for this and I just turned it down? I had to believe that John was right, that I would regret it. So that was a tough moment. I'll tell you this as a little aside. This will give everyone a sense of how difficult this was for me. Sometimes it's hard to express these things in the moment, but at that point, we had two little baby girls. We were living in the town where my wife had grown up, Mercer, and her parents lived just around the corner from us. And so I said to her, after I made this call to John, and John said these devastating words to me, I remember coming downstairs and I was like, you know what? I just need some space. I mean, we weren't like getting a divorce or separating, but I said, I need some space. Yeah. Why don't you and the girls go stay with your mom and dad for a couple of days? I was that distraught. She gladly did it. She didn't fight me on it. Well, I proceeded to stay up. I think I stayed up for like 2 or 3 days straight without sleeping. I turned down my dream.
Yeah.
And I was so frustrated, disappointed. And I took on home projects. Linda, I hate home projects. I tore up carpeting. I refinished the hardwood floor.
Oh, no. And your dream job is now it's evaporated into smoke.
The way I would describe it, we've all seen Forrest Gump. You know that moment where Lieutenant Dan, after he's lost his legs, he's on the ship and he's on the mast and they're in this really strong storm at sea. Right. And Lieutenant Dan gets up on the mast and he shakes his fist. He's like, is that all you got? He's having it out with God. It felt like those 2 or 3 days were like me saying, is that all you got, God? What are we doing here? Why is this way? I was so frustrated. And I remember that vividly. That was a turning point in my life. And I came out of that a resolve, continue to march on. I mean, that's right. That's right. Pressing beyond.
That is. And when you experience a loss like that, because it is a loss. I mean, it was a dream and you had the opportunity and you do go away with regrets.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of pressing beyond in that moment, part of taking the resolve to keep on going was to maybe think and reevaluate the dreams. What I started to think, and I think this is part of having a vision, there'll be moments where that vision is threatened, where that vision feels compromised. And I began to feel as if perhaps the vision was compromised. I started maybe let that dream down. I thought, well, maybe I was wrong about this. I've hit so many closed doors, so many opportunities that didn't materialize. Maybe there's a different dream for me. And I started to begin to settle for something. And I wasn't happy about that. There was no joy in that. After about 6 months or maybe 9 months, I started to recognize that I couldn't do that. I wasn't content to just lay down the dream, the person I thought I had to be. I couldn't lay it down. So I picked it back up again. And it led to an opportunity in Memphis, Tennessee, a place I had never been, place that, quite honestly, this is embarrassing. I probably couldn't have found it on a map at that point. You know, all I knew about was Elvis and barbecue, which both sounded pretty cool. There was a church there that had an opportunity. Told my wife about this job. It was serving in children's ministry. I was an elementary school teacher, so there was a connection there. However, this was like one of the largest churches in the country. It's the largest Presbyterian church in the country. 7,000 people, children's ministry of 1,000 kids on a weekend, hundreds of volunteers. And I had the audacity to tell my wife, I think this is my gig. And she kind of looks at me like, what? You know, here we are in our little Mayberry, USA town, you know, 700 miles away from Memphis, Tennessee. We don't know a soul in Memphis. And I'm telling her, without the proper education, so to speak, or even the proper experience, it's one thing to be an elementary school teacher. It's another thing to lead a ministry of 1,000 kids. There was like this question of, okay, why would this be the job for me? We don't know people here, all that. Miraculously, that job came to fruition. It's still a wonder to me that I was able to make the jump, you know, again, by God's grace, to go from elementary school teacher in a small town to serving in a children's ministry. And this became a dream gig. It was phenomenal. And I learned so much. And I really got dumped in the deep end because I didn't know what I was doing. What a great learning experience that led to more learning experiences. It actually turned into an opportunity to serve at another church in Memphis, another large church that was phenomenal and so much to offer. And I learned so much. You know, through all this, one of the challenges that came to light is I didn't have that seminary education. Mm-hmm. Beginning of the story, I talked about I've never been necessarily a person who was drawn to academia. I'm more of a gut it out kind of guy and learned from the school of hard knocks and experience. And so I never pursued that seminary education, which was one of the things I kept on butting up again. Mm-hmm. And so kind of ran out of opportunities to grow because I didn't have that degree. Right. And then I went to a second church and had some great times there. But again, ran into some difficulties. This time wasn't just the academic hurdle. And I was wounded by a leader there in a significant way. And when I say wounded, I'm talking about emotional hurt, even a sense of betrayal. Again, I think it's something, I know it's not unique to me. I think many people, whether it's in a workplace or in family or in some setting, a relationship.
But that to me is always a motivator to find something that values who you are.
That's right. It was one of those opportunities, once again, to pick yourself up off the ground, dust yourself off, find the resolve to move forward and press beyond. You know, once again, it becomes that kind of thing. And again, by God's grace, I keep on mentioning, which has got to be one of the thematic elements of this talk today we're sharing in, is I was able to pick myself back up and grow from there. Now, that church experienced some really difficult times subsequent to the difficult experience I had, which actually led to an opportunity that was defining as well. And that was to take on actually a greater role of leadership within that church. Our senior-most leaders wound up resigning. And so it led to an opportunity for me to come back and to provide some teaching in that environment and preaching. Mm-hmm. That was significant. In fact, it was so significant that it's really tied to the full circle moment. One day after I had preached there, and this again was one of those, a large church in Memphis, my parents were in town and we went to have some pizza after the services were over. As we were sharing our pizza, my wife got a text message from her sister who worships and still does today at Christ Church at Grove Farm, the John Guest Church, right? And the text says something to the effect of, hey, our pastor just resigned today. The pastor who'd been serving at Christ Church for a few years was taking a new opportunity. And she was just letting Lisa know that news, right? Well, when I heard that text, there's something in me. And this is such a mystical sounding thing. But there was something in me, Linda, that immediately identified. I'll put it this way. When I heard that, the thought that entered my mind was, that's my gig.
I love it. It's the pizza. It's the pizza.
It was the pizza, right? And that's what you wonder, like, okay, is it the pizza? Is it imagination?
It's your pizza delivering your purpose. Or
there you go. Delivering your
pizza. When you saw the text, you just, your instinct, that's your gig. Yeah.
And by the way, I didn't say it out loud, though. I held that all to myself.
You held it?
I thought, okay, I've been crazy enough times. I also thought there were other things that were going to work out, and they didn't. But there was something in it. It was like, okay, I'm taking note of that. That's my gig. That led to a whole process. And it's interesting. You know, a lot of churches today, they'll utilize the help of a search firm. Great way to vet candidates.
Sure.
And what could be a really tricky process. Christchurch used a search firm and I applied for the job. Now, again, I came into this very much like an underdog because you're talking about Christchurch, a place where John Guest is the pastor of renown.
And you said no to him way back when. So
right. So I said no to him. There's already that strike against me. Not only that, no seminary training. And I didn't have senior level leadership in the church. That was significant, but I took a step of faith, thought, you know what? I got to act on the that's my gig moment. And so I'm going to apply for this. And end up going through the process. I had my doubts in the midst of it. And it was an interesting year. It was a year-long process. And there were many times I felt like I might have been wrong about that. Eventually, you know, I started to see that it was actually moving in that direction. And so in November of 2019, I officially took the role of senior pastor at Christ Church at Grove Farm.
And I mean, you know, we talked earlier about the waiting. I'm sure there must have been emails and phone calls and all this going back and forth. You said no to Pastor John Guest early on. You must have encountered him through the interview process this time.
I did. And when I did, you know, at first I wasn't immediately recognizable to him. I mean, we're talking 15 years.
That's right.
I'm sure he moved on from that point and kept on going, right? He wasn't hung up on me.
Right.
But when I started telling him the story, I remember when the lights came on when I was talking to him and he was like, oh, he said, I do remember you. And he told me, he's like, I was so disappointed in that situation. I took no offense to that. I mean, John and I have a great relationship.
Right.
But he did recognize that. But you know what? To his credit, he didn't hold that against me. John and others here believed in me and saw something in me that maybe some others wouldn't have. That's a key part also in Pressing Beyond, I believe. So,
well, when somebody like Pastor John Guest gives you his blessing, if there's anybody who can recognize a leader, Pastor John Guest can. And also to Pastor Craig, I mean, let's not forget, you came on board in November of 19, and then 4 months later, you're leading a church that's on lockdown.
Oh, yeah.
COVID. I think the majority of us thought like, oh my goodness, like nobody ever had to do this before. You're new to the church. Now you're streaming services.
You know, challenges inherent in leadership. But you know what, Linda? I would say this. I felt like I was prepared for that moment. You know, I think going through those 10 years and the years in Memphis and making that transition and then dealing with the personal woundedness and overcoming obstacles, all of it builds your character, grows you in maturity. And look, I didn't have all the answers, but God had prepared me to trust him even through something that was unprecedented, like a worldwide pandemic.
And I mean, look what you have gone through, what he's done through you. It's truly a miracle. And you came full circle, Pastor Craig. You're back in Pittsburgh.
At Christ Church at Grove Farm.
And you're back at Christ Church at Grove Farm. Wow. And
I can't believe it. As I share with you, there's a sense of wonder in my own heart. I'm just very grateful. I feel like a professional ball player. Like I pinch myself and say, can't believe it. God's allowed me to do this. And I'm grateful for the things he's led me through.
Yep. All that underdog, bad grades, being a job. Look at you now. Senior pastor shepherding 1,600 people forward. All right, Pastor Craig, I'm so glad you were on the podcast, and I'm very excited to see what's going to happen that's in front of you.
Thank you so much, Linda. What a gift for me to be able to share with you and to spend this time together. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, Pastor Craig, we'll talk.